episode of Conversation is supported by the generous donations of Klaus Schwab. You can support us too at truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link. truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link.
Listening to Rick. Am I going green? Yes, I am. I'm going green. I'm always in one. Rick, on April, now let's drum roll, and we're going through, look at the calendar, which is the lunar calendar again. It is now Tuesday, I would say the 15th. I've got the date wrong today when I did an invoice. So it's the 15th, not the 14th. Whatever. 15th of April, 2025. And I just got back from Melbourne. Well, yesterday I did. I'm going to go and turn my gramophone. That's another term, wireless or gramophone. Down. So I went to Melbourne on Melbourne on Saturday. Flew in there at, what time did I go? Lunchtime-ish. What a great place. I really enjoyed it. And again, different people, Melbourne people are different people. And if you want to hear their voices, Melbourne types, Frank, definitely a class example of a Melbourne person. Virilicious, V, and her 21 years husband, 21 years happy. Congratulations. I got a message last week saying it was their 21st anniversary. Her and D-Train, Ian, congratulations. That's a long time. That's 3 times 7. There. 21 years, my goodness gracious me. I mean, the most I've done, 14 years, and I'm still getting over it. Still getting over it. And I think, as I used to say, less for murder. I think you get about 7 years for murder these days. So you've had three murder sentences, three life sentences together. Fantastic. Melbourne people, completely different people to Sydney people. A great example of Sydney people, myself. I think I am a Sydney person now, after many years. Rollo, even though we're both non-born in the area, Sydney people, or, you know, people from this side, New South Wales people, completely different people. Why is it so? I want to know why Melbourne people seem to be way more easygoing. Adelaide people, way more easygoing. Perth people, way more easygoing. Sydney people, a bunch of cunts on mass. Not so I can say that because I'm not from there. But they are unfriendly. The New York to LA difference or Auckland to Wellington difference of people. I can't understand why an hour's flight to Melbourne, to Victoria, I'm leaving emerald green, non-stop rain, looking at the window, still with a cough, looking out the window, and it's brown and yellow and parched down below with bushfires. I look down, I can see bushfires. It's incredible when you get up in a plane. I haven't done it for four, it's been 4 years since I've left the earth and went up into the sky and looked down upon this, definitely. It went from green to brown really fast. 1 hour's flight. Now, I'm going to tell you now, it is nonstop. I got out of the plane, looked up. It was a massive, big, long, 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 thin, spreading out really fast trail above my head. Nothing to do with ground. When you're up in the plane, up in the air, these things are way above your flight level for the average person on a normal domestic route. And way above you when you're going international as well. It's stratospheric in solar injections. And they're making it not rain in Victoria. I'll say that again. They're making it not rain in Victoria. They're making it rain fucking cats and fucking dogs here nonstop. I drove back. I'll tell you how amazing I am. Shout out to me. Jumped on a plane at 6 p.m. in Melbourne, on Virgin, got upgraded to to where the rich people sit. Because I went up to this woman and I said, I haven't flown for ages. I've got a digital boarding pass. Is that right? And she said, yeah, it's fine. She goes, also, would you like to be upgraded? Because we've got heaps of room. And I went, of course I would. Of course I would. I don't like poor people. Poor people with no leg room. I don't want to talk to them. Useless eaters. I want to be up there with the elites. And sure enough, I got put up the front. Leather seats. Way more leg room. Way more leg room. Double. and they talk to you nicely. They go, you can tell that there's, you know, the poor people sit down the back and the nice people sit out the front. Even though when you go down, if the plane crashes, it's the rich people get killed first by the look of it. But anyway, I got to Melbourne, and it is public transport expertise there. Absolutely, there's a free, sorry, not free. The big red bus, the sort of the Wiggles, sugar, sugar, big red bus, or whatever, takes you into the city. I flew into Tullamarine, straight into the city, 20, 40, 30 minutes maybe, or whatever. And when you get there, there's trains, buses, and trams everywhere. And that easily identifiable, I have to say this. If you can hear, sometimes you can't. There's a cockroach, a kookaburra going off in the background. Whenever I come on, they start laughing. Why is this so? Why is this so? And often you don't hear it, but I can hear it. So I'm just going to say this. Melbourne is a fantastic place. A lot of curry getting eaten there, I'll just say that. And most of the cafes seem to be Asian run. Very well run, though. Very beautiful food. My son is just an absolute paradise as far as for young people. He's got the most incredible apartment that's been fully paid for. This rich guy that has the pays for the scholarship. I'm not going to name him, but he's someone really rich I'd never heard of before. He's built this beautiful 20-story building next to the university. They've got their own theatre, huge big theatre, a giant big music room with electric guitars, acoustic guitars and drums, just for them. Study rooms, their own laundry, an awesome gym, all for fucking free for him, that is, for him. Otherwise, you have to pay $500 a week. So, my goodness, he's gracious me. My son has this absolutely, you know, and he did a lot of hard work, and it was off his own bat that he discovered this thing. So, thank God for that. And he is going to have the best 3 years. And it is an awesome spot. When I say multicultural, it is extremely multicultural there. Sydney is as well, but this seems to be, it's about the same. Not as many, is it more Asian? But there still is the original Melbourneites, especially the blokes. And I met one at my cousin's birthday the other night. That classic, how would you look at, say, the Chopper Reed type, shaved head, neck tattoos and facial tattoos everywhere. There's blokes, there seems to be a lot of knockabouts up there, a lot more than normal. Which is a good thing. I had a great conversation with him. I of course, out and knock about him because I knew more interesting people than he did, but he was fascinated. Great night. But my goodness gracious, fantastic. And wonderful to meet my younger cousins that I hadn't seen for a long time. And one of them was extremely interested in listening to the shows I do. I said, look, to be honest, you better listen to a Rick and Rollo show than a Be Told show because they're a bit over the top of most people's heads if I start going on about stuff, which I will be talking about, and that is a geomancy and the spectrum of all the EMFs and radio frequencies that you're living under are right now. Not to be talked on a fakeologist. He will just, the guy throws a wet blanket straight on the subject. I'm not going to ever go over there and talk about any of the stuff that I talk about here because it's not getting appreciated. Frank tried to bring it up the other day and he said, I don't believe that. Now, listen, I guarantee you now, the book, highly recommended, Dirty Electricity, the show, what's his name? That show, Greg Carwood's show, The Higher Side Chats. He brought the guy on and the guy was really hesitant to talk to him because he knew this guy's been talking to lunatics a lot of the time. Or lunatics. And when I say that, I mean people that are talking about, you know, aliens, disembodied spirits. That's me. I talk about them, et cetera, et cetera. This guy was just, he's a proper scientist and he said, without any doubt, that as soon as electricity was introduced, electric lighting back in 1870 or whatever it is, diabetes came out of the woodwork. There was lots of illnesses because he said in America they don't earth the electricity properly and he calls it dirty electricity. Now, I've been into geomancy for many years, and that is a study of where you're living. There could be an underground stream running under your house. It will cause you illnesses. Back in the day, you had your various different names of different, let's call them witch doctors to be more, you know, broad spectrum. Or in Maori, the Tohunga. In Aboriginal Koori or Murray, that's the other one, would have had their name. And that was the guy that understood when you're setting up where you're going to live, you don't put it there because you can just by the trees, they can tell by the trees and the tap roots where the underground streams are. This is a thing. Don't try and talk about this over there. It will, these, particularly him, he's not interested in it. He just wants to talk about other things. He doesn't understand the stuff. I've been into the stuff for fucking 40 fucking years plus, guaranteed. Spoken to so many different people. I understand that there's a there with the whole. Earth is, there's a lot of complex things that you need to know, and they're quite simple once you get to know them. And that's not to live underground where there's running streams because it causes, it's kind of a natural, we call it radiation or a natural electricity. It's like you can say the same thing now in your house. You've got plenty of people now, EMF regulators or people that can tell you that don't sleep. If you've got two plugs on either side of your bed, it means you've got a circuit running right next to you. It's running. It's like a river of electricity. You're electric, as for the Chinese would agree with that. Do not have it running behind your head. You get headaches, back problems, blah, 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 blah. And I've had many experiences and talked to so many different people. This is a thing. Now, back in the day when they first wired up houses, particularly, I think it would have been America and England, and Europe, I guess. They suddenly encountered people getting really, really sick. And I think it was diabetes, it wasn't called diabetes back then, but they just called it rich people's syndrome or disease. I haven't had any adverts come through here. Yeah, am I being recorded? Look, I'm going green, as usual. And more ways than one. And more ways than one, I keep saying. Yeah, so you've got your electrical currents and natural ones, which is just the river running past you. It's this and that. Underneath you particularly, it's all bad. And they would set up their villages away from the trees, away from where they could see that it was possibly a source of the trees were getting the water from. It's quite easy to spot it on the top of this earth if you can see these things. It's guaranteed there's a there. Many, many years ago, my mother told me that her friend there was a psychic lady, say you claim then slash witch doctor or witch doctoress. She was incredibly popular, you know, a lot of people, and she never did it for money. She only did it so you could give her a donation if you wanted to, but she was not giving her powers away for money. And she said to my mother's friend that who'd gone in there with neck pains and all these different things and said, look, it'll be where you're sleeping. There'll be an underground stream or there'll be something. And sure enough, they found out, yes, there was. This woman, without knowing that the problem, could have diagnosed her neck issues and headaches from just where she was sleeping and what was under the, possibly underneath the house. And she was correct. And this is in the 70s, I heard this. So that piqued my interest as a 15-year-old man. I thought, there you go. There's, you know, that's interesting. That's interesting. And then I've followed this through speaking to people. Again, I've spoken about the Tohunga and that friend of mine who had a epileptic fit. It's when he was a baby. His mother took him to the local, again, we'll call him witch doctor for you, or Tohunga. And he made him a out of a timber box using native timbers, had copper wire at the end of it. And he described it to me as a naive, no understanding normie, that it looked like a battery where you put your batteries in. He said his mother was told to put him in there and he slept for first 3 months of his life. It fixed up his seizures and he never had a seizure again. How did the guy know this? I don't know. I don't know. But there's definitely an ancient way of helping people. They've been exterminated by the Jesuit type, or the here we go. Y'all listening to be told.
No matter what your age,
you're listening to another conversation
or your affiliation
on truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage,
and now on with the conversation.
In the art of conversation,
told, I think, is it 25? I think it's 25. Be told, 25 on, so the 15th of April, 2025. And you were talking about the unknown and the known and why not to bother talking about it with, there is nothing worse than having someone coming up, just throw a wet blanket on a conversation like this. And this is what you need to know. You need to know these invisible waves and invisible spectrums that are out there. It's quite easily seen if you understand these things, particularly radio towers and things like that. Now we've got even worse. We've got the 5G, 6G coming, stuff like that. And what you'll notice is a lot of people coming down with certain illnesses. Crow 777 had a fantastic show. I shared it, and Frank made the mistake of trying to share it to the fakeologist, wasting his time. We've got roundly told, you know, no, I don't believe any of that. Again, that's the end of me talking about anything interesting over there. It's all going to be done here when it comes to this kind of stuff. You're just wasting your time when someone says, I don't believe that. You've got to go have interesting people get into that conversation and expand on it and expunge all the negative people that are just saying, oh, I don't believe that. I can't see it, so it doesn't happen. People who can't see, you've got a microwave in your house, or most people have. It heats your food up. I'll just say that. You can't see the waves doing it, but it does do it. It works. So just because you can't see something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Simple as that. And that's a classic example of it, the microwave, which is what the new 5G 1 millimeter wave is. And the only way it gets and travels is because it hooks on a secondary onto a 3G or whatever, onto a secondary signal. And this is exactly what Zbigniew Brzezinski said in Between Two Ages, the coming technocratic control of the humans, 72. I think it was just before the Rockefellers came and grabbed him and said, you got to come and work for us. But you got to read that book, and it says that they can use secondary signals to make people happy, sad, or sleepy. And they're doing it now with these giant towers everywhere. You'll notice, you know, you can become angry for no reason, or you're tired, whatever. It could be just where you're standing, these invisible frequencies that are going around. Just because you can't see them doesn't mean they're not there. I'm talking to you and you're listening to me. I'm standing there holding a 5G phone. My voice is going through the wire Well, it's not one up. Well, yeah, it's wired to my headphones, but somehow it's getting to turn to packets on the internet and shared to Joel's server, and he puts it out as a podcast. And you can't see my words flying through the air, but they're there. And this is the problem. You've got too many people denying real technology and making up excuses for something else that is doing it. But I think a lot of the illnesses out there, according to Dirty Electricity, but I forget the name of the guy that wrote the book. I'll mute for a bit and I'll get the name of the author. Highly recommend it. But yeah, Melbourne, back to Melbourne. I was roaming around there yesterday, looking at things. To me, it's Paris. The identical lay of the land, the same lamps on the bridges, these big copper or brass type glass lamps, lanterns, are the same as in Paris. Identical. There's even, I took a photo of one of those bridges. So basically it's called the Yarra, I think. Is it the Yarra? It runs right through Melbourne. It's the same as the Seine. The Seine in France, in Paris. Maybe the Seine's a bit wider. Maybe it's exactly the same. It looks identical to me. And in Paris, you've got lots of older style bridges. A lot of these ones are kind of more modern, but looks exactly the same. And there's the people sitting around, lots of cruisers going up and down, lots of floating nightclubs, exactly the same as Paris. A great big thing that looks like the Eiffel Tower to the right of the South Bank, which is exactly like the left bank in Paris. So it's identical. No one ever told me that Melbourne and Paris are basically the same lay of the land. Which is maybe why the people are more friendly there. They've got this giant electrical current, water going surging through the middle of the city. Maybe it discharges the place, maybe the more easygoing people. Has anyone ever said that before? Am I the only person? I would say I am. There you go. Although there'd be an old architect somewhere that knew this, and that's why that was designed for that reason. And that's why Canberra was never built there, or Sydney. They built it in the middle of nowhere, right in the swamp where it soaks. Another reason that they built it there is a giant pentagram shape. And they say, oh, it's because the Melbourne people were arguing too much with the New South Wales people, and we want to have a neutral zone, which is kind of halfway between Sydney and Melbourne. And they built Canberra, a giant pentagram, all these towers everywhere and to be honest, I like Canberra. I would not have lived there all the time, but I found it was a great place to go with the kids. It had great museums, the Questacon, which is well worth going, where you can see Tesla stuff, giant electrical coils, man-made artificial cyclones that they make using pressure systems, a smaller version of what they can do in real life. I'll just say that again. If you want to go to Questacon, you probably... I'll just bring this up. My youngest son, who I just visited, he was always a bit like his dad, listening to him and not believing things. And one day when he would have only been 6 years of age, we went to the Questacon, and there was a guy came up and he said this. He was standing up and talking about the moon landings and stuff. And I said to my son, I said, how come you... He goes, Dad, I was going to say something, but I didn't want to upset everybody there. He was only 6 or 7 years of age. He already knew this guy was bullshitting. Wise child, very wise child. And the guy got up. He was explaining the moon landings and stuff. He goes, everyone, he goes, he's holding two balls in his hand. Don't be rude. Two rubber balls. And he held them up and he said, how far do you think that we've been since 1972 out of space? And he said, I'll bring them together or take them far apart to show you. There's the moon, this is the Earth. He goes, how far has the humankind been towards the moon since 72? And everyone's going, oh, halfway, quarter way, whatever. No, it's like a millimeter off the left, the rubber ball he had in his left hand. That's according to the mainstream version, how far we've been since, which is basically low Earth orbit. Literally, and it really shows you what a joke the whole story is. How do they get 360,000 kilometers, or whatever it was, into space through the Van Allen belt into the moon on a perfect first time? Never, no problem whatsoever. They've never done it since. Absolute load of old cobblers. That's what it is. A load of old cobblers. And he knew that, even as a seven-year-old child, 7 or 8 years of age. By the way, he was smart enough to, he said, "Oh, Dad, I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to upset the other people." And I thought, you're a good little man. Good little Manny for saying that. But, yeah, so Melbourne, back to Melbourne, I was walking around and lots of weird statues, and I found one. And I took a photo of it, and it's this huge copper naked, well, the bodies of a female with pubic hair, what, clutching one of her breasts, with skulls on her wings, with wings, rather. And I said to, I was about 20 meters away from her. I said, "That looks like Lucifer to me." And sure enough, I got there, and that head, there was a male head, female body, giant wings, skulls on the wings, you know, like really graphic nipples and pubic hair on the side of a building, just randomly put there. Why would you do that? Who would say, if you said to someone, like, "I want to do a statue, it's going to cost, you know, it's about a $50,000 or $60,000 copper statue," they'd say, "Oh, is it going to be something happy?" No, it's going to be a naked man with a female body with skulls all over the wings, and it's going to be hanging off the side of this building. You'd go, "I don't think so. I think I might go with the nice happy person that suggested we put a clown on the side of the building or something." No, this is all heavy stuff. And Sydney is absolutely riddled with this stuff. If you go up Centrepoint Tower and look down, you can look down on this huge, big, basically, again, shaped like a pentagram area with these churches, big Catholic churches by coincidence. And all around it is old statues of ancient Greek myths, huge brass statues of the Minotaur and et cetera, et cetera. Nothing to do with Australia, nothing to do like cowboys or, you know, people roping, you know, sheep or whatever. No, no, no. They've got ancient Greek myths that was all through Sydney, the CBD area. Why is this so? Why are these ancient myths constantly in your face? Why didn't they put something happier other than a man with a woman's body, graphic? I'm talking about with copper pubic hair, basically, with breasts with nipples going, you know, high beam, with skulls on her wing, his wings. It's straight out Baphomet. That's what it was. And I said to my son and his girlfriend, who's got a girlfriend now, lovely little creature, I said, "This is not that." And I said, "Do you think that's a female face?" And they said, "No, it looks like a man." And I said, "Well, it's because that's a Baphomet statue. Right next to, on a big, wide street, made out of brass or copper or whatever, going green as they do, like my little picture of the cat here right now as I talk, it goes green. This is like full on, and they were everywhere. And plus, you've got this fucking modern architecture, which is abysmal. I'm going to have to say that everywhere." The great two become one. One, there's two giant towers with a big gold band around them that joins it together with a walkway in between the two towers, in the, right in the middle of the CBD. Straight out, two become one. We've got that in Sydney. Where is that? Sydney right now with the Crown, I'll say it again, Crown Casino, this giant phallic thing, but it's basically two giant different shapes, buildings really close together, binded together with a crown on the top of it, corona on the top of it, just been built, straight out to become one. It's definitely two buildings melded together. You can see it from a distance. And this building is, wherever you go in Sydney or in New South, in the West or whatever, you can see it. It's extremely tall, extremely visible. Two become one. This is the ancient symbology going right back to Plato, etc., and before, or the, you know, the Babylonian area of the two become one. And this is the female and male merging into one. It spells an architecture everywhere, and it's everywhere in Melbourne. It's certainly in Sydney and anywhere else. If you go to a big city in New York, obviously now they've got the two towers disappeared and they've got the one tower in between. So two became one. Blah, 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 blah. So they're there. Not for the people that don't want to talk about the esoteric, though. They don't want to know about this. It doesn't make any sense to them. It's not affecting them, so they think. But, it is affecting you. It's going into your subconscious and your subconscious. Now, this weekend is Easter. I should be doing a few shows. Tonight and just do a, you know, I didn't do anything over the weekend, which is fantastic. Apart from spend an awful lot of money drinking alcohol. I mean, even the cheapest I could get was $10 a schooner, which is about the same as here. But they don't call them schooners, they call them, it's pots and pints over here. In Victoria. Whereas in Sydney, it's schooners and middies, a midi and a schooner. But beer, it's the cheapest thing to produce, like next to cider. It's three ingredients. How can they charge so much for it? It's because it's being taxed, guaranteed. Now, I'm going to mute. I'm going to find the name of this book, Dirty Electricity, so I'll be back. You won't even notice. Okay, I found it. It's Dr. Sam Millam. Interesting coincidence there. Dirty Electricity. I'm just going to go back and find. I shared it to myself. Oh, here it is. I found it. Dirty Electricity. A new book by Samuel Millam, MD, MPH, miles per hour. There's some joking there. When Thomas Edison began wiring New York City with a direct current electricity distribution system in the 1880s, he gave humankind the magic of electric light, heat, and power. In the process, though, he inadvertently opened up a Pandora's box of unimaginable illness and death. Dirty Electricity tells the story of Dr. Samuel Millam, the scientist who first alerted the world about the frightening link between occupational exposure to electromagnetic fields, electromagnetic pollution, and human disease. Millam takes readers through his early years in education, Now, I'm going to highly recommend people out there by Dirty Electricity by Samuel Millam, Dr. Millam. And again, he was interviewed on the Greg Carwood show, and Carwood did a good job. But Millam, and I understand why, was a bit hesitant because he understood that, you know, this guy was interviewing some real weirdos, John Le Bon, one of them, and that was early in the early days. A lot of strange stuff, and he's, you know, big into the show's like bubblegum conspiracy, basically. He has some really good stuff, and he has a lot of crap. And that's, you know, maybe there's there with some of it, but a lot more UFO-y. He's a bit UFO-y, old Greg. But, you know, good voice, huge productions. You know, who's like the music and everything, the production. And he's making a bit of money out of this, I would believe. But Dr. Millam and his book is highly recommended. You've got to get out there and look into this stuff.
I don't know about that one.
I'm sorry. It's a fact. There's dirty electricity is bad. We're not even talking about microwave here. We're talking about your basic radio transmitters. Interesting, my grandfather, who was an amateur ham radio operator, he had cancer of the eye, and he also had a stroke and lost the power of his voice, and was sitting in front of a bank of these giant old valve transmitters, big time. Was that what caused it? I don't know, but I think you've got to be, that's why going to the beach or bathing in bicarbonate soda, which I do quite frequently, you discharge yourself from all these negative waves, man. Just like Oddball said in Kelly's Heroes, you know, to Captain Steubing, or what's his name, the actor that played Captain Steubing. Hey, Moriarty, knock off the negative waves, man. Because you're listening to Retold.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to another conversation.
Or your preoccupation.
On truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now on with the conversation.
The art of conversation.
Listening to the wonderful Be Told show, episode number 25. I better double check on that. I'm pretty sure it'll be episode 25, though. Here we go. We're going to go and check onto the podcast addict. Where's my face? There it is there. Pointing at me, saying, Be Told. Yes, this is it. So Rainbow Demons was last week's one. And this is episode 25 in 2025 on April the 14th. 15th. April the 15th, 25. And so we got the Easter holidays. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sure they would, I know they've tried to change it into rabbits leaving eggs and stuff like that, and Ishtar and stuff like that still going. But it's still very, Easter is still a very traditional Christian holiday, even though we are now completely being swamped with Indians that are not, but they've been more into Ishtar for sure. It's stuff like that, but they still, if we go to the ABC on the wireless and listen to the classic station, you'll still get lots of great old Christian, the Messiah and things like that, you know, old classical music. Still to this day, they aren't getting rid of that yet. I'm sure they'd like to, though. I'm sure they'd like to, because it's still, Easter makes you think of the crucifixion. And did you see, they discovered, they wouldn't put it on our mainstream media, let me tell you now, but on a lot of alternative media, well, Christian media, this was a genuine discovery underneath in Jerusalem. They discovered a huge big garden, exactly like the Garden of Gethsemane was. Great song. Ian Gillan sings one of the best versions. We won't play that one tonight, but Jesus Christ Superstar musical. Great musical. Oh, I love it. One of the few musicals I actually like. Even though he kind of gets resurrected, he's portrayed as just a normal human being and a fallible human being in the musical Jesus Christ Superstar. But it is a great musical. I do love it. The great music, fantastic music, and the beautiful Yvonne Elliman singing with her beautiful voice. And you had Ian Gillan doing the original, the very, 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 very first version was Ian Gillan, my favourite lead singer ever back in the day of Deep Purple, played Jesus in the original one. And I think his voice outdoes Ted Neely, who is still to this day, if he's not dead, still playing Jesus out there, and he's probably 70 or nearly 80 years of age, the oldest Jesus out there. Great voice, though. Ted Neely he was the star of the movie musical. Now I don't know if I've gone on about this on the Be Told show, but you got to see that musical because it was all filmed on location in the exact areas in the biblical story. Beautiful rock formations and desert, all that. They had the Israeli army helping them. You know, they had playing as extras. Fantastic. The visuals of the movie Jesus Christ Superstar. I think, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to watch that on Easter Sunday on YouTube or whatever I decide to get it for free on. I love it. It's a really good, powerful, great, fantastic music. Interesting that they made Judas was black in this movie. These days, would that happen? They'd say that's bad. That's bad. He had such a great voice, though. The guy that plays Judas, what a singer. Can't remember his name, but what a fucking singer. Where did I leave and where was I going from there? So we're in Melbourne against full of ugly architecture. Underneath, around, there's beautiful old buildings still there, but They've got this modern glass bullshit that is everywhere. A few interesting ones, but it looks beautiful at night time, I have to say that. Not so good during the day. But I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it will not be the last time. As soon as I can, I'll be going back there. When I get some money, spare money, just to go back for a... I'd go back there to a week there if I can. As soon as I get some kind of ability to do that, I do it. I really enjoy myself there. Nice people. Is it to do with this job, the Yarra going through, discharging everything, and is why people seem to be a bit happier there? Is there a there? I'm going to say there is. Is that why Sydney people are more miserable and uptight? Because they haven't got a river running through them? I'm going to say that it is. There you go. Prove me wrong. I noticed IPS resurfaced after at least almost 2 weeks of not being there with some really good stuff. Really enjoyed some of his stuff that he did. I can't remember anything offhandily that he said that was, but I listened to a show of his the other night and I enjoyed it. Always interesting. It's because I've got undiagnosed, but I diagnosed myself with attention deficit disorder. I want to change subjects really fast. And I do, as you would know, if you listen to the Be Told shows, 25 of them. I think the oldest one is 2 years old now. And I repeat myself a lot, but not as much as Alan Watt. I'll say that. He used to just bring in the head of he was free talking as well. I free talk. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about when I press the button. No idea what I'm going to talk about. I have maybe a slight idea about one subject, and then I just go bounce from sideways to sideways. What the master, I'd love to know what his real name was, though. Pardon the pun, what his real name was. Because he was friends with some members of Bay City Rollers, and he seemed to know, be really quite close with one of them, one of the guitarists, I think, which is interesting. Because he probably played all the lead breaks on their singles. I don't think any of them are very good musicians. But he repeated himself an awful lot as well. But I don't do it that bad. I'm not that bad. And when I leave tonight, though, and I won't be hanging around for much long because I have to get up early. I drove here last night, got home at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I've got to drive back to the winner is Sydney via another place tomorrow and then come back again Thursday night. So, but it's manageable, really manageable. I'm not stressed. I was stressed to find out how I was going to get home and do what I did today, but I did it. Absolutely fucking pissing down the rain though. And green. Well, everywhere here. The complete opposite to Melbourne. Melbourne, yellow, brown. Out surrounding the outside areas. Absolutely. But I was very impressed. I like the people of Melbourne. We already knew that, though, because I think there's more Melbourne people on Fakeologist, via Fakeologist, than there is from anywhere else on this planet. How many can I name them all? Frank, Sean, Critical Thinker, BV, there's a guy on what's his name? On the EGI, one of the EGI, I think. He's from Melbourne. D-Train and Verilicious, Melbourne. Now living in Gold Coast. Over the years, I think, what's his name? I think Jungle Surfers in Melbourne. The other guy that's one of those guys from that thing, he's in Melbourne. Melbourne is the more awake place. And can I see it? Yes, I can. Is it to do with the location? I think it is. Nicer people. Just like interesting, I was talking to a guy last night about it, and he said, look, I totally agree because he's from Perth. He said, Perth people like Melbourne people. We always go to Melbourne for our holidays because they're more friendly because we're like, Perth are more friendly. Adelaide's more friendly, but it's, again, Sydney, a stuck-up bunch of cunts. And they are. They really are. And Canberra people. Nice, you know, great friends there, but they're not... You know, they're just stuck up. There's something about them that it's not as friendly. Melbourne people, Victorians 100%. Here, they're dismissed as Mexicans. That's what they call Victorians, Mexicans, south of the border. That's a fact. That's a fact. Now, the music I'm going to play tonight, this is the latest song by Pulp, Jarvis Cocker's band. Pretentious bunch of whatevers, but I like the song. I thought it was fantastic. It's called The Spike, I think. I was listening to it on the way home on the media monitor. I thought, that's a really good song because he reminds me of David Bowie. And I remember listening to old Pulp songs coming out in the 90s and going, please, literally, I remember going, please let this be David Bowie. Because now this is a change of subject a bit, which is, well, keep talking as I can. I reckon there's a there with entities and people being walk-ins into their personalities and giving them some kind of boost. Bowie, T-Rex, all these people had this very similar kind of someone coming up, like particularly Bowie. And all of a sudden, he lost his mojo or whatever you call it. Remember Mr. Mojo Rising isn't Jim Morrison, literally. That certain people get a kind of a spirit comes into them and with this charisma and amazing voice and does these amazing songs, then they just disappear. And all of a sudden, Marilyn Manson's got that same exact charisma and spirit. Negative, but great music. You know, listen to that song, Say 10, and it's energetic. It kind of makes it charges you up, but it's bad energy. Let me just tell you that. Bowie lost all his mojo back in, I think, Scary Monsters was his last decent album. Then he's done a peasance of anything good to the end up being the worst album ever made, the Blacks, whatever it's called, Black. What was it? The very last one. It's pathetic. And all these people go, oh, my God, Bowie's done some amazing stuff. He just died, and all of a sudden he comes out with Black Star. Black Star. It was the worst music ever. Just embarrassing. That's all I have to say. But yet, back in the day, you know, he'd come out and he had this charisma and he could. I'm talking about the 70s, the Ziggy. Now, Ziggy Stardust is 100% satanic. The lightning bolt across his face, the zigzag. So, Ziggy and Stardust and the stars, blah, blah, blah. It's all straight out Lucifer. That's what, and then DB, double, that's 42, blah, 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 Saturn, blah, 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 blah. But he lost his mojo. That demon, whatever that was inside him, just left him and entered into a whole lot of different people. Okay, and they put out this really energetic, amazing, charismatic music, you know, that attracted all the people into, you know, this kind of weird drugs and transvesticism, et cetera. So he was like an empty vessel that they walked in. He had the looks. He got enveloped by a spirit and he became incredibly popular for culture creation. Bowie, you know, he probably introduced the whole thing of bisexuality was, you know, pushed by David Bowie, even though I don't even think he was even slightly bisexual. I think he was 100% heterosexual, but he pretended to be. And that's what Tavistock wanted. They needed someone that could attract male and females because he's so good looking. And then all the bands started dressing in glitter, the sweet. All the males looked like females. Two become one. Blah, 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 blah. We could just do a show. Actually, well, that will be the next one I'll do. It's just on music, on this whole glam rock transvesticism, males dressing up as females. You can't tell if they were male or female. You know, women were attracted to them. Men were pretending not to be, but that's probably what they were because these guys were dressed up with makeup on looking like women, guaranteed. Mick Jagger's a class example of this as well in the Rolling Stones and certain eras, phases that he did. Very much so. Anyway, and so we're going to go out with a song by Pulp, the latest song called The Spike. But he has the same Bowie kind of way of singing in some parts. So I just like it. Not for everybody, but Pulp's quite a popular band. Jarvis Cocker was a fashion student in the 80s, and he just happened to have in his class the witch, 100% witch guaranteed, the girlfriend of someone who I sadly lent the book to and I haven't got it back, about Keith Richards' girlfriend. The book, She's a Rainbow, about this 100%. And she actually looks like a man as well, to be honest. I have to quickly mute because I can't quite remember the name of this woman. It's not Marianne Faithfull, but it's her best friend. Anita Pallenberg, I was thinking of. This is the female who she was. So she kind of was kind of good looking, but she's very masculine looking, really. She was a Satanist for sure. And she came in out of nowhere. She was from a rich Italian French kind of background. She was, after she got, you know, into drugs and heroin, there's all sorts of bad stories about her. Always seances and always hiring haunted places for her and her, Keith to stay in. But she has this kind of look, this kind of masculine face as well, I'd have to say. Physically female. But she was actually, she starred in that movie that was Kenneth Anger and all those people, something to do with her. Very Crowley performance. That was her first movie. And she has that face, though, that kind of, like, she, Pallenberg and Brian Connolly from The Suite, even though they're completely different people, look the same. He's got a feminine kind of face, even though he later, he lost all that because of his alcoholism and, you know, he was Scottish as well and drank himself to death. But these, back in the day, rock singers and their girlfriends always looked kind of looked the same. There was a real two become one back in the day. The whole thing was 100% part of this agenda. Tavistock behind the glam rock movement and the Stones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I'm going to leave tonight. I need to unwind and not to be talking. So this is Be Told, episode 25. We're going to leave with The Spike by Pulp. And I'm suggesting he's always got this part to his voice where he sounds... Oh. Thank you.
No one will ever understand it. And no one will ever have the last word. Because it's not something you could ever say. So swivel.
Thank you, Rick.